You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Happy New Year, y'all.
Happy New Year.
Oh my God. Kara. We've made it. It's 2021. We're here.
I truly can't believe it, honestly. Not that anything is all that much different, but there is hope on the horizon. It certainly feels that way to me.
Exactly. There absolutely is. And we are so, so happy to see 2020 go in the past. Be gone. Be gone. I mean, there were silver linings for sure. We've talked about those, but
absolutely. You hear my kids in the background.
Yeah.
So not everything has changed, everyone. No. Clearly.
No. Oh my God. But we are so happy to be welcoming you back to a new calendar year of episodes. Thank y'all for sticking with us through 2020. You know, what a year that was, starting in the studio and then transitioning to remote and all that has happened and all that we have all been through.
We're still here.
Yes, we are still here. And here is to moving forward in so many ways in 2021. But as you will hear, this episode was recorded before the holidays.
We are so excited. We have so many more exciting guests coming your way. Truly, we've already recorded some really, really wonderful and important and inspiring conversations. But kicking us off is the one and only Tony Award winner, Kelly O'Hara.
Hello, welcome, Kelly. Thanks so much
for being here.
I'm so glad to be here, guys. Thank you.
Oh, man. It's like you're just nailing all of the things. The remote learning, you've got the publicity Zooms. It's like life in quarantine and COVID, right? So we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
So much.
You're welcome. Just the new norm, guys.
The new norm. Oh, my gosh. The first thing that we ask all of our guests is to tell us about their kids, because we feel like it's something that we don't get asked a lot. So tell us about your kiddos.
Yeah, thank you. I will. I'm so proud to. And it's not something I talk about a lot in these types, or well, this isn't even these types. This is a mama's group. And so I'm so happy to talk about my kids. Usually it's more private for me. My son is 11. His name is Owen James. And my daughter is Charlotte Ann, and she is 7. Owen is in middle school. She's in elementary school. Owen is not in school today. He's upstairs on his 8th hour of Zooming. And my daughter's in sort of a hybrid program, and she's actually home too now for the afternoon Zooming as well.
Wow. Wow. I love those names, Owen and Charlotte. I just have to say, I love those.
They're very special. Owen's a family name, and Charlotte has an extraordinary story. I did not name her. Maybe we have time for that later.
Yeah, we have time now if you would share it. Yeah.
Okay. I had my son very easily. It was during South Pacific, and oops, I didn't mean to get pregnant so soon. And then we went for a second one, and it just never happened. It wouldn't happen. Well, it eventually did. Didn't happen for about 2.5 years. And in that time, my mother-in-law was very sick with pancreatic cancer, just a gorgeous, gorgeous woman. And for some reason, out of nowhere, I got pregnant after trying forever. And at the moment I got pregnant, her health went horribly wrong, and she went into complete decline. And on her deathbed, I was about 4.5 months pregnant. I didn't know if I was having a girl or a boy. She was basically, she was dying that day. The doctor said, this is it. We were all sitting around in hospice and in the bedroom. But she woke up and she started vibrantly talking to a little girl named Charlotte. And she said, look at you. You're going to be just like your mom, dancing around like that. And then she said, it must have been so hard for your parents having so much trouble at first. And she said, it's Charlotte, isn't it? And I went to the doctor the next day and found out I was having a little girl. She was due on my mother-in-law's birthday. She was born the next morning. And when she was about 1.5 years, we found a picture. And I said, what's this picture of, cousin said, what's this picture of Charlotte doing here? And my father-in-law said, that's a picture of Pam, my mother-in-law. They have the same physical look. And then about 3 years old, Charlotte started to twirl and spin. So in some strange time continuum, if Pam met her in some strange alternate universe, she was probably about 3 and she was spinning. And so they did meet. They did meet in their own time. And Charlotte is with us now. And every once in a while, she will do something that only Pam could have done, like line up the rubber duckies on the bathtub, just the way Pam did. And nobody knows why. And she's here and she's my miracle. And she's Charlotte.
Kelly, I'm in tears over here. That's absolutely beautiful. Oh my gosh.
And your listeners won't be able to see it, but later I'll show you girls a picture of these two girls that look just the same.
I would love that. Oh my God. That is beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. I mean, I had goosebumps when you were talking about her in the hospital and talking and seeing her. And I am such a believer, and that's just beautiful to think that they've known each other, or that on some plane my son was
very close with his grandmother before she died. And I told him once, what better way to come back than as your best friend, your sister.
Yeah.
So that she could
still be with him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, Kelly, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. That's like such a dose of goodness and love and light. And oh man, thank you for sharing that. That was beautiful. Oh, wow. She's showing us this picture and these ladies look, they're like the same girl.
If it weren't for the difference in the photo quality, knowing that one was older, you would absolutely think that's the same child.
Wow.
Yeah. The family thought that's Charlotte. And I just found this one that looked sort of like it. So I put them together.
Wow.
Anyway.
Wow.
So two special babies. I'm very, very proud of them.
That's amazing. That's incredible. Well, and so talk about, if you would, like, for specifically, you're one of our first, we've talked to moms who've been pregnant, you know, sort of as ensemble players or, you know, in Broadway shows, but you are the first person we've spoken to that was visibly pregnant during and starring in a show and, you know, Tony nominee and winner. I mean, it's like, if I recall correctly, because my husband Eric was in South Pacific with Kelly, so that's how we've met. But he told me, I remember him saying that, did they add like a chambray shirt or like a denim shirt or something to watch that man?
You know, I was visibly pregnant and more in both pregnancies, more so in the second one because I did a show until she was born, and sort of the hysterically ruined the whole character by being hugely pregnant. But in South Pacific, I stayed until about 5.5 months. And I remember I was so, the wonderful costume designer, Catherine Zuber, I was like, can I just have a pair of shorts? Can I put my shorts on early? Because I do have a pair of shorts. Can I put, nope, that's not going to be period. So you're going to have to wear that swimming suit. She did let me move to a one piece from a bikini, but it's almost like she allowed for me to have stolen one of the CB shirts, maybe Eric's shirt, you know. So we pretended like I sort of had one just draped over me because I think my backside was really trying to catch up with my front side. And so I did for those cartwheels and all that stuff for Wash That Man. I wore sort of this open unbuttoned, she didn't even want me to button it, this open unbuttoned shirt.
Wow.
For like the last month because it was getting pretty funny.
Oh my God. Well, and those costumes in general, I mean, you're a really fit person. And I remember you are. I remember like And that satin, there was like a satin gown that you wore that's like cut on the bias. Like, I just remember like thinking, how are they even gonna, I couldn't imagine what they were doing to try to hide that for you. Cause satin is not forgiving. We know that. Anyone who's tried to wear a satin slip, Calvin Klein dress or whatever, y'all, those are not for every type. But, and also cartwheels. When you were 5 months pregnant. Like, how, were you feeling okay? I mean, I'm sure because you are someone who is athletic to a certain degree and dancing already, like you're doing 8 shows a week. Mm-hmm. So our bodies get into, you know, into shape in a different way. But how was that for you? Were you sick or cartwheels? Your center had to be off.
Yeah, it was off. I will say that at first I thought I'm going to not do the cartwheels. And then it became changing at that point, became more scary to me because there was water on the ground from the wash that man scene. And so all the girls, you know, talk about girls having girls' backs. Every night they would spend extra time with towels during the scene, just wiping, making sure there was nothing for me to slip on when I then did Wonderful Guy and the cartwheels and everything like that. I did talk to doctors. I said, anything that you had been doing, you're supposed to continue to do. So you're dancing, you know, after a while, you're not going to go jog a million miles, although I know some women do, but a little bit of dancing, a couple of cartwheels actually was just fine. I had a little morning sickness with Owen, definitely not nearly as sick as I was with Charlotte. But by the nighttime, I sort of felt energized by having the show. And that's the case for both shows that I did with both of them. I just felt like the show was what kept me going, gave me the energy. It was a climbing of the tower at the end of Wonderful Guy that scared me the most, actually. It was the slipping or the falling from there that I started toward the end of my time there to be really freaked out by. And so if anybody took a video of those last, I was probably going up the stairs, ree, 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 you know, making sure I had my hands on every single rung of that ladder. But other than that, I was younger and more just energetic and maybe risky, but I'm so proud. I'm so proud that I had him in my tummy for so much of that. And it was a blast when I think back on it.
Yeah.
It really is special. We both have been on stage pregnant. And I just think that it's a very particular experience because you are kind of sharing it with this human you haven't met yet, you know, they're a part of it. And I just think it's so special. What show were you doing when you were pregnant with Charlotte that you said you were almost up to the time you gave birth?
So again, it was the same dancing. I was doing Nice Work If You Can Get It with her until four and a half months. So sliding down the banister, flipping off the bed, those pratfalls. But then I went into Far From Heaven, which was this musical about this, this housewife with this, you know, these little 50s dresses and everything like that. And slowly but surely, the dress became empire waist, grew and closed under my chin. And by the end of it, I just looked like, I just waddled on and off the stage. It was hysterical. But we did it. We did it until like right the month before she was born.
That's so wonderful that they let you continue to do it even while looking, you know, visibly pregnant.
Well, I don't think there was at that point, I still feel a little bit inside guilty. And that's the best word I can have because you build something for a while, especially a brand new show that's sort of been written. And this happened for both Bridges of Madison County and Far From Heaven, which happened at the same time. I had been trying to get pregnant and have this child. And then I got pregnant unexpectedly sort of. And so both of those shows were sort of put in jeopardy in a way. And I think Playwrights Horizons and that whole team for Far From Heaven, it was already scheduled. It was on the books. You know, they were like, let's just go ahead. Otherwise we have to put a million jobs in jeopardy and everything. Yeah. So in a way I sometimes feel guilty that the show's reception might've been altered by my physical state and we maybe didn't run as long as we could have because I just had to go pop. And, but anyway, I don't spend too much time on it because why would I do that? But at the same time, it was strange. And then I had the baby and Bridges was sort of waiting on me and I had to start that show way before I was mentally or emotionally or physically ready.
I can't imagine doing that show.
I know, but you were gorgeous in that. I remember seeing you and you were so stunning and so gorgeous. And I do have to say though, Mama had some nursing boobs.
I did.
I mean, at that point had had Elliot, or I was pregnant or something. And I remember like going to see the show and I was like, oh, mama.
Yeah.
She looked gorgeous.
I got out of nursing. And believe it, let me tell you something. On the stage, I had to time, I learned the hard way, had to time that pumping out just right. Because I did have to get out of that bathtub. If I didn't pump at intermission, I was leaking all in that bathwater.
Oh God.
And spraying, you know, because I hadn't seen my baby since 1 p.m., you know, and it was already on a matinee. It was 4 p.m. or whatever by the time I got in that bathtub. So it was, once you let those babies loose.
Oh my God. This is something like no one would ever think about the fact. It's a lot, you know, we would pump at intermission, but we were fully clothed at all times. But that's true. Oh my gosh. You had to work out that number too of just like
how soon,
when do I need a pump so that when I get out of this tub, with no clothes on.
Kelly,
I would feel it. I'd be standing there and I would feel the letdown.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Well, sometimes just like the air hitting your breast would allow the letdown to happen, like any sort of stimulation. So of course you're getting out of the water and that could happen.
And you know, I have to say during South Pacific, which was my first child, that's the first thing that started to change for me, which, you know, I didn't complain, but at the same time I was wearing this bikini and my sweet, very appropriate and unperverted friend, Danny Burstein, was the first person to know my secret. Cause I wasn't telling anybody. We were standing backstage and I had this, you know, bikini on and we had to be backstage together for this long period of time. And he looked over at me and he looked at my face and he goes, okay, what's going on? You know, because he knew just by the shape of my body, and he's a father of two. And so I said, you're going to be my secret holder for the next like 4 weeks before I can tell people. And I love that story because what better guy than to
see. Oh my God.
And so for the next 4 weeks, on the days that I felt like throwing up or something like that, he was like, let's do this, you know, take a breath. We'll get through this next scene.
I mean, he's just the best human anyway. I mean, and then to have him be a father. So he's been down this road with the mother of his children. And like, he knows what it is and what the journey is and how to, you know, best support a lady going through it. So, that's lovely.
I love that.
It's something before we move on from that, what you touched on about the sort of feeling guilty with regard to like Far From Heaven and Bridges. I mean, it's Audra spoke to that as well with Shuffle Along. It's like when you are someone of your standing and caliber in our community, projects are created around you. And that's something I don't think we think about a lot when we're, you know, sending up our dreams of starring in a show or having someone write something for us. And the weight of that, of all the people, especially, and it's not fair. I mean, I don't think it's fair for, you know, as women, particularly, like you said, you were trying for so long and our bodies are, we don't know when it's going to happen, what's going to happen. But at the end of the day, like the gift of having a child is going to come first, you know, right? Our lives are going to come first, but I'm sure that is, that was a weight that you had to sort of reconcile to a certain degree. Audra spoke to that too. And I think it's just very interesting. That's not something that we hear about very often. So.
No. And you know, these shows for us, and I hope that any young mother or hopeful mother who might hear this, there's not one regret, you know, like I might've felt guilty or I might sometimes, I never had any treatment. I don't know if I can speak for Audra. I never had any treatment of negativity. You know, they supported me. You know, we got out there and we did what we could do. We did the best we could do with the situation. But what happens with shows is they're so important to us. We think and we know they are in a certain way, but they're so fleeting. And guess what's not fleeting? My two babies.
Yeah.
And so when I look at them, I don't think for a second about that short sacrifice, that short amount of sacrifice professionally. And so sometimes the whole idea of putting things off or because of this career, that's the one thing I wasn't going to sacrifice. I was going to just stick it in the middle, you know? And to be honest, doing that only made everything I was doing richer and that much more doable because it wasn't, my whole psyche wasn't on the work anymore. In fact, the work became so much more joyous and less pressured because I had these little lives to make me feel so much more purposeful and also need me more. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't wait, ladies.
That's something that comes up a lot, actually, is that this perspective that you gain from motherhood and how it does kind of take this weird pressure off your life in the industry, and how we can be so like laser beam focused on it and our world broadens to something bigger. And certainly it's a balance and a juggle, but the choices become really clear. Like the priorities shift in a way that you're able to make decisions a lot more like efficiently and effectively. This isn't going to work right now, or this is going to work right now, and I'm going to make it work, you know? Something that comes up a lot. You are involved in so many organizations, and you're really vocal on social media about social justice. And I mean, you use your fame and your voice for so much good in the world, which is wonderful. But one of the organizations you are particularly vocal about is Say.org, which is a stuttering organization that you are on the advisory board of. Can you tell us a little bit more about it? Because I don't think it's an organization that maybe a lot of people know about.
Yeah. And you know what? Maybe you wouldn't know about it if you don't know someone who has a stutter, or you don't have a stutter yourself. You're not a person who stutters. You know, my husband and I met about 18 years ago almost. And that one of our first dates was that he took me to meet this very small group of people in this organization called at that time, Our Time Theater Company. And it was started by, Taro Alexander, who is a person who stutters, and he didn't meet another person who stutters until he was 27 years old.
Wow.
And which seems impossible, but it's not. You know, you go to school, you keep your mouth shut once you realize that a teacher is going to shut you down or kids are going to make fun of you. You stop talking. And yet Taro had all of this talent. You know, he's such a wonderful dancer and rhythm person. And he started to have this great career, but then he thought, I've got to do something so that no kid, no person goes through what I went through. And what happened for me when I met this group is that I saw this group would put together, these kids would write about their feelings, they would rap about them and dance about them and sing about them. And as we know, many people can open their mouths and sing, but they might not even be able to say their name, you know, if put in front of that, you know, that pressure. And so I watched these children all of a sudden have this voice to use. And when they're together, to be given the time to speak in the way they speak. And that was why it was called Our Time, which then eventually became Say. And I've seen these children come through that program, having all these friends, going to camp, talking about their feelings, communicating about them. And it's gone from being a person who's a shut-in, who stops being a part of this world, to someone who is literally just thriving and leading this world. And now we have the president-elect of the United States as a person who stutters. So that example right there is just, it's extraordinary what we can do when we just give a person the ability to communicate. And I know you, the three of us girls, we use our bodies and our voices. We sing to communicate and to show who we are. And the idea that someone might not know how to do that or be led to that. So I just got really passionate about it. And they asked me to be involved. I mean, they're so wonderful to include me in the involvement of this, because it does more for me. I always say that. I go to these things and I'm sort of broken in a fresh, beautiful way and rebuilt by it every time.
I love that. I mean, it's just so interesting that music in general is something that can bring out somebody's voice who might have a hard time articulating things, but the drive of the music and the even the breath support of speaking continuously. I mean, I have very little understanding of stuttering, but the very little bit I do, that breath support of continuing the breath movement through your body allows a thought to get through completely. And what better, I mean, person to be inspiring these kids? I mean, come on, like to have Kelly O'Kara walk into the room and, you know, be the one to inspire them to it. I just think that's phenomenal.
Yeah. But and like, now, like with Joe Biden, with that video of him meeting the boy who stutters, and he, you know, he gets down to his level and he talks about it and says, oh, you stutter too? You know, you can do anything. You can be anything. Look at me. And it's so touching. I mean, so many things about him are just heartwarming in general. But I know I'm so glad that there is someone who is using their platform and their privilege to speak up with regard to stuttering, something like stuttering. I mean, there are things that there are organizations that go under the radar a bit, you know, and issues that people struggle with that might not be as noticeable or might not have as much mention in the grand scheme of, you know, it's not a hot topic or it's not a trend, you know, to like talk about certain issues. And, but there are still people out there who need help and who need assistance and who want to grow and discover their voice in that way. And I just think it's amazing. That's awesome. That's incredible. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I'm so proud of it. And, you know, I work with a guy named Aryan Moyad a lot who teaches a class. He runs a school and he and his wife and they have two daughters. They're very much, this is how they live their lives, but he teaches a class called Artist to Citizen. And it's this idea that if you have been given a voice that you can use for good. But you know, for me, it's easy. It just comes out. I haven't had a problem with stuttering or to be able to use your voice to sing or whatever, it's sort of a responsibility. It's not, there's no, by means, no burden. It's actually a gift and a responsibility to then turn around and try to use it in another way. I don't do enough with it. I could do more, but, for these kids who, don't have it that easy to just speak their mind, sometimes if you speak up for them, then all of a sudden their voices become louder and then they feel the confidence to then speak louder. And that's all I want for them. I want everybody to have a chance.
Yeah. There's nothing better than seeing a kid realize their potential and their confidence and putting it into action. And that's awesome. I mean, as mothers, we know that just with our own children, you know, and so that's incredible. You also are really, you scroll down your Instagram, you're super vocal with regard to the shift that's happening, I think, within our own theater community, you know, with regard to that has sort of been born out of the Black Lives Matter movement, with regard to Black Theater United or the Dear White American Theater letter that was going around. I know it's tricky, at least for me, for my own self. And I spoke about this with a guest a little while ago. As a white woman in this industry, there are definitely times in the room where I have not been aware of microaggressions or things that have happened, or me even macro. I mean, like, you know, there might have been overt things that I was not even aware of because it wasn't on my radar. And I think that now we are all becoming much more aware. And we are, you know, I've signed the letter. You signed the letter. Kara, I think, signed the letter, you know, and we're all pledging now to be more aware. And that was our privilege and our ignorance that until that point we weren't as present. And I, not through any fault, you know, to a certain degree, like if we're not looking for it, that is ignorance and privilege. But did anything specific happen within the rooms that you've been in, or is it just sort of the social justice and the need to use your voice, like you just spoke about, that has drawn you to these causes as we move forward in our community?
Well, you know, I just feel like I am the same as you. There's been a big wake up call. It's sad in huge ways that I feel like the African American community has been asking us to wake up for so long, right. And all of a sudden we're like, oh right, you know, let's jump into action. And I don't want it to be frivolous. I don't want it to be, you know, I've been working as much as I can with a group, Broadway for Racial Justice, that mm-hmm. Brandon Nace founded, because he asked me to help. I mean, he gave me the gift of asking for help, because there's a part of me that's also, what can I do? And then my Black friends are saying, don't ask us. Right. We don't know what to do. Yeah. So it's, for me right now, I don't have the answers. What I have are ears that are listening. And then when the call is there, and if there's something I can create and do, I want to help. You know, I'm not going to put all over my platform just what the next guy does. I want to listen to what's needed. I joined the Pass the Mic program because I thought, especially because of where I'm from, I felt like if 40,000 of those followers are from Oklahoma, let's just say, and I give my page to Zakiya Young and have her talk on my page, or Carmen Ruby Floyd, and have them talk about their passions and the way they grew up and how they feel about this business, macro or microaggressions they've experienced, that a new ears will be there. And that's one of the ways I wanted to help. I feel again, there's no obligation. It's sort of a natural thing to say, why are we doing better at this point? And can we make change? And the thing is that you just have to go day by day and hope that with the next generation of influence, you know, things will change for them. And then little by little, this grander change happens. And without posting about it, I've tried to have the hard conversations. I've tried to send the emails, you know, that not everybody will see, to try to gain some sort of help for certain entities like Broadway for Racial Justice or whatever it is, because I don't want to do something that is a trend or faddy. I want to do something that might help with the change, even in small ways. But all this to say, I'm being educated every single day right now. And I'm humbled by that. And I'm not defensive about that in the ways that I've been wrong and the ways that I've been privileged and the ways I raise my children, which seem easier in so many ways. And so right now I just feel the real need to be humble and to listen and open my ears, you know?
Yeah. I agree. I mean, you were from Oklahoma, I'm from Texas, and it's the same kind of, thing as I try to think about that if, when I post either on Facebook, I mean, this has been going on for years with regards to like gay rights or gay marriage or, you know, the racism that's happening and things that are going on. I always think if there's just one person in Texas who might think differently for a moment or see something that I post or see, you know, a picture of my friend or an experience that's happening or hear their journey, maybe they will change their mindset and then move forward and change others. Because I do, you know, knowing being in the South, there's a large battle that's still taking place and it's not just there,
it's everywhere. No. I mean, I think that's what this has really illuminated, that, you know, this kind of systemic racism that even in an area that seems, you know, from the look of it to be very diverse, that the underbelly is still there. And that's what we really need to investigate, you know?
Totally.
Yeah. And Zakiya said something to me that was really important in this whole thing, which is you have these conversations and the person, and especially people who don't want conflict, you know, it's hard, but she said they might not have the space then and there to hear what you're saying, but there will be a moment in the future because you've said it, that their mind will be open to hearing it and they will take it in when they can, but it will be there for them to receive. So it's important to have these conversations, even if you're getting walls up in this present moment. I also learned from talking to many of my friends, and I did try to reach out to my friends and say, hey, when we were working on that show, did you feel, you know, what did you feel? And I was glad to hear those perspectives, but I also saw that the perspectives are very different from each other.
Yeah.
You know, just because a person is a Black person doesn't mean they feel exactly like this Black person or that Black person.
Yeah.
So we're talking about human stories and they all need to be heard and they all need to be processed. And you can agree or disagree. You can feel the way you need to feel, but hopefully we are going to the right end, which is equality and opportunity. And, you know, and I'm, like I said, I'm humbled by that. And I see this as a journey that we're going to stay on.
Yeah.
And, you know, the engine is not going to stop.
No, I agree.
Yes.
We're going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I want to.
Yeah, let's shift gears a little bit.
I'm going to shift gears for a second because there was just a big announcement made the other day about someone joining the cast of The Gilded Age, the new Julian Fellowes. I mean, Kelly, that is amazing. That cast is incredible. It's going to be gorgeous, I'm sure. Are you just like, I mean, you know, because there have been a lot of people putting themselves on tape during this time. I mean, let's be honest. There have been a lot of self-tape auditions, and we've all been putting it out there trying to do it. Did this just come up, or was it in the works before the shutdown? I mean, incredible.
You want to talk about an actor's ego. I got the job last November, and we went into production. My first day of shooting was the week of the shutdown. March. All of us. We were starting March 12th. We were having a party. March 16th, we were going to shoot. So I've not been able to talk about it. You know, I actually auditioned in the room at Telsey last November, maybe even late October. So I was sort of sitting on this really exciting piece of information. And then they never made an announcement. They made an announcement about a certain few people, like the main leads. And then it just kind of stopped. And I tell you, I just didn't care anymore because HBO has been so lovely to all of us about the promise and the dedication to the cast members that we are going to make this work. We are going to give you gainful employment. And when I knew that I wouldn't be doing theater for a while or concerts, I just basically got down on my knees and started to cry out of gratitude that I had this for the first time, really, a real television series. And I just, I really did feel, you know, blessed by that. And so whenever they wanted to tell people was fine with me. And so I started shooting about, 2 weeks ago, and an announcement came out. So it's all happening at once, which is nice.
How has that been? How has shooting been, especially during this time?
They're just doing the most amazing. I think Cynthia Nixon even wrote an op-ed or something about comparing the protocol for the TV show that we're on, you know, versus her son's school protocol, which was so much less, you know, and why that is. Where's that? Where are the priorities? I don't think she was complaining for herself, but she was trying to say, where do we put importance and priority? And so I will tell you, This is just an example. I live in Connecticut, and I shoot tomorrow, and we have to be tested the day before, and they have concierge testing, and a man showed up on my doorstep in Connecticut, a nurse in full like frontline gear, and swabbed my nose at the front door. And I thought to myself, well, now I just feel like an asshole. When there are all these people needing tests, I really, you know, and I need to work. My children, my family, we need it. So I'm really glad. But HBO is just going above and beyond to make sure that we are safe on that set. And we all were. I mean, there are masks galore, and then everyone is tested out the wazoo. And then we get it all set up, lighting everything. And then when it's picture up, someone comes by and you take your mask off and you put it into a safe bag. They run off. We shoot. They run back out. You get your mask back out and put it on immediately. And so you're really not putting yourself in harm's way. I do feel if this is the new norm, at least for a while, we're succeeding.
Yeah. You know?
That's hopeful. I mean, that's, you know, anytime we hear of these stories and we know people are filming, that's great. It's like, so do you have to... I'm wondering this. So you got tested today and you're shooting mm-hmm. tomorrow. So are mm-hmm. you supposed to like on the honor system, like stay in your house or what do you have to do to ensure that tomorrow when you go, you haven't been exposed? You know what I mean?
Well, we had these huge Zooms with all of HBO and all of the medical, everybody they've hired on to, mm-hmm. to upkeep this, this protocol. And there is a bubble-ish aspect to this. However, a lot of us have children who are going to some sort of hybrid school situation. So there is that sort of, just that over the line, you know, mm-hmm. we have to deal with that. But do we want you to go out and throw parties? Do we want you to go, you know, to stores unnecessarily? So for Thanksgiving, it was my husband and my two children and me. That's what we did this year. You know, we tried to be as careful as we can. Mm-hmm. I was also tested 3 days ago. You know, I'm testing regularly.
Right.
That test I did on my own, but I think there's a risk to all of it, but you do the very best you can. And I do believe that thankfully everyone that's involved is thinking of it in the same selfless way, right. which is to not just protect myself,
right.
but to protect everybody I'm walking in and everybody's job.
Totally.
The minute we bring something in, we're all out of work.
Right.
So it's not the whole, hey, if I get sick, I get sick.
No. Yeah. No,
there's a responsibility. It's been that way from the get-go, from the jump, like the responsibility to society to be mm-hmm. safe, to protect the people around you, you know, to protect the person that you might see at the grocery store, even though you have a mask on, you know, the people you don't know as well as the people that you do.
Oh my God. I would do all the tests and do all the things if I could just go back to work.
I have to say I also did a Broadway workshop, which I'm not quite sure why, but an in-person Broadway for this show I'm working on. And Brian D'Arcy James is my opposite. And I'm telling you, we tested all the time, like several times a week. We were in a bubble. We come into a room in New York City in masks. He and I are dancing and kissing in masks.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, okay, this is the most, when someone sees this video in 50 years, what was this moment in time? It's sort of interesting to be part of that history, at the same time, you know, you just do it because we're working.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Is your nose raw? I mean, I've heard other people, I think Laura Benanti said in an article the other day, she was like, I get tested every day because she's shooting something as well. And she was like, my nose is just.
Yeah. Well, it's in the hands of the medical professional, because some people are like, tickle, tickle, tickle. Oh. And other people are like up in your
right.
cavity, like ripping your nose up. So I don't know what is the right thing. Cause when I do it to myself, which I do these home ones that they send us, you know, I try to get in there. I want a real answer.
Right.
I don't want a half, you know, half acid. So,
yeah,
totally. My nose is raw. And then I've got like a line of pimples across my cheeks.
Oh, from the mask. Yeah.
I get them on the tip of my nose from it. And I've never had like pimples here, but they're all here from the mask.
Yeah. Oh, I just, let me know. How was it, Kelly? I don't know about you. Kara and I had low key Thanksgivings. And like you said, it was your kids and your husband and yourself. How was that lovely for you? Because for me, I really appreciated being in the pajamas. And, you know, we had our side dishes, but it wasn't the big to do. Although I have to say, I don't know about y'all ladies, but when I cook my cornbread dressing, there was still a massive amount, even though I only used pan of cornbread. I was like, I'm going to cut this down. I'm just going to make one pan of cornbread and make the dressing. And still there was a massive amount of food. So
first of all, my Southern mother taught me how to cook. And so I don't know how to cook.
Exactly.
So I had a 20-pound turkey. I still have two Pyrexes full of it. I made a King Ranch casserole last night with one of them. I had a sheet of, we called it dressing, but the stuffing, mashed potatoes, cheese grits, gravy, green beans, cranberry, pumpkin pie. And that's just the way it's going to be. And if we have to get, and I gave some to some friends, but other than that, we're going to have leftovers. Even now we have them.
Same. Oh, yeah. Yesterday I had some leftover cheese hash browns and I was like, this is the end of it. I have to, we're done. We're done. It was also super strange. And you've been on the parade and you've done like the whole to do and had the Broadway show schedule. I texted Kara the other night. It was like Thanksgiving night. And I said, this is so weird to be sitting here on Thanksgiving night and not have six shows in the next 3 days or not be having to worry about fitting in my costumes the next day because I ate so many things, you know, or whatever. So it's so interesting, right? It's like, it's a strange sensation. And maybe you might have had this moment more so just because as a principal player, you do shorter runs sometimes or like you do your years and then you move on. But like, those of us in the ensemble who sit at, you know, Jersey Boys for 6 years, for instance, it's like, I'm used to having a lot to do and not having a real holiday weekend. This was the first holiday weekend that I had. And
it was really lovely.
It was nice.
Yeah. You know what? I think there's that as much as theater has been hit the hardest, like not the hardest, but you know, one of the hardest things besides, you know, the entertainment industry, restaurants, whatever. I think that there was also at least a moment, and I think we can all agree, back in around the holidays, for instance, but also back in March and April when you're like, this is awesome. Yeah. For just a second, as long as I can pay the bills. And then about like end of April, early, I was like, what are we going to do?
Right.
For a second, I thought, these are my babies. And I put them to sleep for, you know, 7 nights in a row. And then another, you know, there's a part of me that has been wishing for this for 20 years, you know, just to have more time. And then we realized, you know, our passion is we don't know when we're going to have it again. And, right. and anxiety sets in. But I've been trying to go back into those feelings. And the holidays did help. It's like this idea of let's just all curl up together. We did a living room sleepover for two nights this weekend. And we started doing that back in March, like once a week. And I feel like those are the things that, you know, mom's gone. And, you know, in the one night that I'm like Sunday, Monday, if you're doing a Broadway show, you know, you're trying to cram a lot in those nights. Whereas, like you said, we're just in our jammy and we have time. Let's play Boggle. Let's play Scattergories. Let's do something. So yeah, this is, there's a real hell and a real heaven to these times. And as long as we're, you know, every time we lose a friend or find out a friend is sick or lose a family member, it's devastation. Mm-hmm. But in those moments when you can find some joy, we have to, we must.
Yeah.
Yes, we must. Yeah.
There are definite silver linings that we can find.
Yeah. 1000%. Just to like circle it back and wrap it up. We like to ask our guests a little something that maybe we can put to our listeners too and ask them the same question. How do you think motherhood has affected or influenced your work as an actress, as a singer, as an entertainer? How has becoming a mother influenced it?
You know, the cliche of being an actor of just be, please, you know, just be in all of that, you know, access it right now, you know, just be in the middle of it. Having studied the method and sat for 4 hours trying to find how to do and failing miserably, you know, when you have children, the preciousness of life is so huge and so emotional that for the first time in my life, those types of feelings, those powerful, powerful feelings about being, and not just about my own children, but then my childhood and my grandparents and my parents, it all started to sit right there on my shoulder and on my arms. And things changed incredibly for me. I think it's because there was more space in my psyche and in my heart. It was so kind of overflowing with many things, as opposed to it being work or some sort of technical thing I could reach. I didn't have time for that part. What I had time for was just to access everything I was carrying around, which was often fatigue filled with heart and emotion. And then secondly, so yes, richer and more present. But secondly, my work became less desperate and less important to me. And when it became less important to me, I think I became better because I wasn't putting so much pressure on it because I had so many bigger fish to fry at home with my children. And I think that it's being a mother for me has only made my work and my career for me better, whether or not it's more successful, but more doable, more livable, more exciting. The highs were higher, you know. So that for me, that's just been, that's a joy. I don't know how I would, I just wouldn't be an artist. I don't know what kind of artist I would be without that.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's lovely.
What better note to end on?
Yeah, for sure. Kelly, thank you so much for sharing with us today, for joining us and taking a moment. We really appreciate it so much.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, guys. Thanks for doing this. This is really great.
Thank you. We all try to use our voices the best we can, right? And platforms. Yep. So exactly. Working artist moms for the win, honey. Be well and have a happy holiday.
All right. You too. Okay. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our awesome theme song, our producers Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, and of course, the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.